Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 19, Dan Metters. Dan Metters operates a business with a business partner, Eric Lambert, down in rural Kentucky. And what's different about this interview for me is the style that I use. I really almost immediately jump into their business because I'm fascinated by their business. They are building an empire, as the title suggests, and they're very clear about it, know exactly where they're going, and they know exactly how to get there. And quite frankly, they will be successful. There's no doubt in my mind. And building an empire has a negative connotation to it in a lot of the circles that I travel in the FBA world and the online world. But I think that most people really want that, where, you know, they have a group of people that can do a lot of the work. They get to go and do a lot of the strategy themselves personally and really enjoy running the business. These guys have it figured out. And so in this segment, we spend a lot of time talking about structure, talking about employees, who they hired, when they hired, at what point in their business they hire. We get into pay structures. We get into bonus structures. We spend quite a bit of time getting into details. Dan holds nothing back, and that's what I think, quite frankly, is one of the reasons they're so successful. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight I'm really excited because this is one of the bigger players in the business that I've spoken with. And what really is fascinating is the approach, the professional approach, the consistency that Dan and his partner Eric really apply to their business. So I'm really excited to have Dan Metters tonight. Dan, welcome.
Hey, thank you, Stephen.
You know, your story is such a compelling story because I think you're where everybody wants to be, right? You've already, in our minds, you know, in the smaller sellers' minds, you figured it out. And I'm sure it was just easy. It was just like turning a key in the ignition, right? There was no challenges, no struggles in any of that, right? Just simple business, right? It just really is amazing that you persevered. You know, you're 4 years into this business and you're hitting really significant levels, but you're past the point of a stride, I would say. You're running almost full speed. How did you get – let's go back to the beginning when you started, right? Did you start or did Eric start the business?
We started it jointly, actually.
Okay. And if I remember on one of the interviews you were on, one of the shows, did you work together somewhere, or is that how you knew each other?
Yeah, we worked together for another e-commerce company, and we wanted something – we wanted to do something a little bit differently. So we started our own business on the side as – more of a side project with a $600 investment.
And so do either of you have a formal education?
Yeah, I have a degree in education, and I was a pre-law major. And okay. Eric majored in computer networking.
Okay, and so there's where I knew somebody was in the computer business, and then there's the business side of it, because I've heard you speak about business so intelligently, and I'm thinking to myself, there's a banker, there's something there. So pre-law would explain some of that. So you guys were working together at a company, and obviously it must have had something to do with IT or something. And so you guys decided to get out and do something. How did you come up with the structure? I mean, was that all figured out in before you started, or have you been making it up as you go?
Well, whenever we first started, one of our friends kind of showed us retail arbitrage, and it was really interesting from the perspective of we didn't believe it was actually possible. So we saw it in action, and we were like, we should probably, you know, I definitely want to give this a try, and Eric's like, yeah, I'll try it. So we each decided that we could lose $300 each and not care. And we went out with a very simple set of principles of we wanted our items to be 30,000 sales rank or less, and we wanted to make about around a 50% ROI, and that's all we cared about. So when we started, it wasn't very structured. We just had a little tiny set of operating rules that we used. But beyond that, our business, as far as our business structure, whenever we committed to doing it, we were 50% partners from the beginning, and we've simply never changed that.
Do you think, are you complementary to each other? Obviously, I mean, you wouldn't have this level of success. Who's the entrepreneur between the two of you?
I tend to be more of the idea and creation guy. Eric is very, very structured. He's tedious. He's organized. He generally works with like our CPAs, any legal issues, anything like that. That's generally Eric's realm. He's our accounts payable guy as well, so he handles, you know, everybody getting paid. I tend to spend the money, and he tends to pay the people with it.
That's great. Now, you know, you have quite a structure in your business. You know, I guess I should mention at this point that, you know, you're past the multiple seven-figure mark already this year, but, you know, you're going to do significantly better. And yet, you really don't have a very large staff. You don't have a very large operation. Does everybody have their own roles, or, you know, is it crunch time? Everybody's out on the floor helping, or what? How's that work?
Actually, we are very, very structured in how we approach things, and it's even more so purposely because we want to be able to identify bottlenecks. So we had one person who packs and ships all of our incoming Amazon stuff. So everything goes through him. His name's Baron. And we had he was able to constantly finish his work. Now, he didn't have a ton of time left over, but he was able to consistently finish. So that helped us identify a bottleneck that we needed more sourcing power. So we brought on an additional sourcer. We already had one full-time sourcer. His name's Matt. So we brought on an additional full-time sourcer, and all they do is look for products, set up accounts with manufacturers and companies, and his name's Roy. And that was such that we could make sure that we're filling his time before we put another employee in place. We also hired three VAs to help source and kind of push the envelope as far as we could on that front.
Let me stop there, because I want to – my mind just races ahead and wants to answer these questions in my mind first. So is you and Eric who started the business, was there – at that point when you started, was it just the two of you?
Yep, we did. We didn't hire our first employee until December of last year.
Okay, and who was that? Which position was that?
Well, actually, we hired two. We hired
– okay.
We hired Baron and Matt. One is a sorcerer, okay. One is a
– okay, so they're equally – I mean, I'm trying to see which came first, the cart or the horse. So you realized – I mean, I'm looking at your numbers right now that you just posted. You've already sold 90,000 units this year, right? So 90,000 things, and you're describing it one person's able to process those 90,000, obviously plus, because this is what sold, not plus what you sent in. You right now, that one person was able to handle – when you were half this size, I guess is a better way to say it, personally.
Yeah, I mean, we still only have one person processing our products. We have no backlog whatsoever. Generally, most of our items that come in are out the door the same day, or if they come in late in the day, they will go out the following day.
Okay, and so you've really spent some time. Who's the expert that figured all that out? That you or Eric?
In which capacity? Figured out
the shipping piece of it, how to move that much product through.
Well, that's actually a combination of me and Eric. I tend to develop systems, and Eric will come through and more or less perfect the system. So I designed a workflow to process things more efficiently, and then Eric then generally follows behind and looks for gaps in that, and will come in and fix it and alter it and work with our employee Baron to make it even faster. We actually had a couple people who had taken our course that came today, and they were amazed at how fast Baron processes inventory. They actually was like, seriously, can I film this? Because he processed our workflow is incredible. The way we structure our work to make sure it's done as efficiently as possible. That's why we're able to process so many units.
That's amazing. And you know, in that description, it doesn't make sense to outsource that function because, boy, it sounds like you could be insourcing for other people. You could be processing for others.
It's certainly a possibility. We definitely have the space, but our goal isn't to stop our growth. So I feel like we have more growth potential simply doing what we're doing than outsourcing our ability to do it to other people.
But let me ask this then. Is the process today similar to what it was when you first hired him?
No, it's definitely changed quite a bit, but that was more it changes based on our changes as a company. For example, obviously our volume's gotten quite a bit stronger since that point. But not just that, our space has changed. We moved into a much bigger building, which allowed us to be operate much more efficiently.
Did you buy equipment or anything that helps make it work?
Yes, we buy. Basically, if the way this works is, if we think that we need it, or if we can come up with a way that it would improve our workflow, we will buy a piece of equipment. We do not. That's one thing we do not skimp on whatsoever. We're constantly trying to make ourselves bigger, faster, stronger, so to speak. So if we can come up with a way to design something that into our workflow that will improve those processes, we definitely buy it. Some of the things that we have multiple pallet jacks, so we don't have to push them across the warehouse. We have a forklift. We have multiple hand carts. We have shopping carts to move product from one place to another. And everything is set in a station such that it has to be handled minimally.
That's smart. So you're reducing touch points. Are you also, and let me ask it this way, have you changed some buying based on the amount of activity it takes to prepare an item? So, you know, if you got to bag it and label it and do and put this in, you might steer clear of it. Has that also evolved as you've managed the business?
Our view on that is much different than most people, mostly because we are currently slightly over capacitized, but we're the short answer is no, we haven't changed that at all. In fact, it's just the handling time for us is a factor of our cost. So if the item is still profitable, we will purchase it. And if we need to make a change structurally on our back end to improve our workflow, we do that. So I will add another employee before I will cut a product line.
So wait, I want to get that again. Your handling time is a factor of our cost.
Correct.
I think that's genius. So you're saying, hey, you know, I did another interview and they had the same opinion. We use an example of $1.35 to pay someone to process for them. That's what they build into their model. They just say, hey, it's going to cost me $1.35 an item, so I just got to build that into the model. If it still makes it profitable, I'm buying it. And that's basically what you're saying, the same thing.
That is much higher than ours. We handle items very, very efficiently. But it's very similar. We do essentially for the similar product types, we run time trials every time we process products. We run multiple time trials, take an average, and simply add that to our cost, not on anything that would appear on our taxes, because we don't want extra cost of goods and inventory. But we keep that in Restock. We use a program called Restock Pro. We used to keep it in spreadsheets, and that was simply factored in, and then we examined that based on our final ROI of the product to see if it was a profitable carry or not.
It's just so smart, though. Again, you know, listeners are going to be like, "Wow, this is really next level." But if you really want to become a legitimate, scaled business, these are the things that you really need to pay attention to. And it just fascinates me that you're able to do the volume you do with the number of people you do. And it's clearly because you're paying attention to this stuff. That degree came in handy. Let me tell you, that's great. That's really smart. Now you're talking about sourcing. So I think we understand the shipping side, right? Product's coming in, he's receiving, he's processing, labeling if it needs to, or case packing, whatever it is. Pallet, I'm assuming you're shipping it back in by the pallet whenever you can. And so you're doing that kind of stuff,
we actually
right?
do that really awkwardly compared to most people. If it comes in on multiple pallets, we process it and ship it back out on multiple pallets. If it comes in on a single pallet, we'll process it and ship it out in our normal parcel shipments. So our goal is not currently to save as much money on shipping as possible, it, like I said, that's all a factor of our cost. Instead, we try to maximize our ability to get it out our out of our doors as fast as possible.
Okay, and again, that's a different thinking. You to be able to think at that level is really impressive. So I think we understand that side of the business. Now, the other side of the business that you're taking clearly to next levels is a sourcing. So you hired somebody, and they have a degree in sourcing, I assume, right? Is that where they went to college for?
Well, one of our employees, Matt, he takes part-time night classes. He actually said he was considering leaving college because our business is growing so much, and he loves being a part of it, and he wants to be he said, basically, I want to be a lifer with you guys. You guys are awesome. But as far as purchasing products to sell, in no capacity he had ever purchased and sold products online.
Okay, so you're taking somebody, and would you mind saying his age?
He actually just turned 21.
Oh, God. So you're taking this kid, this baby, who doesn't know a lot about everything, and you're taking somebody and you're just starting the training process. I mean, how long does it take to get him to be able to start producing more than his cost?
The very first month that he worked for us, that was the only time our sales, our month-over-month sales had went down. And that was because I spent zero time sourcing for us and 100% of my time training him. And Eric similarly was training our processing employee and working with him. We had a pre-developed system for him coming in, but Eric was working with him and focused really intensely on making sure that he knew all Amazon shipping regulations. And while he was doing that, I was working with Matt. The first thing we did, we started with online arbitrage, and our goal was simply to learn what sales rank actually means and how to define it in terms of quantity of sales per month. So we would experiment with random quantities of products and just basically let him see his work through. The next thing that we did is we transitioned his time into about 50% online arbitrage, 50% wholesale. And we used the knowledge that we built from the online arbitrage side as the foundation for the wholesale side. So we were looking at products. We were looking at products for volume as opposed to profit margin, and simply identifying good products. That's the only thing we cared about at first was, I want you to identify a list of good products and tell me why they could be good. So we put those terms into sales per month, analyze competition and things like that. And within that month, he had developed a really good eye for products. Like, he understood, you know, this sales rank generally sells this many copies per month. So, then it just becomes a concern of pricing. So after we had developed that huge list, and bear in mind, we were buying very minimally, only online arbitrage sourcing throughout this month. But I cared more about the focusing on the process than focusing on the end solution, or sales. So after we focused on that, we transitioned into how to contact manufacturers, distributors, wholesalers in general, and convince them to sell to us. Now, that for the types of products that we buy, that is much more difficult than just contacting any distributor. That, you know, we carry products that are far more restrictive. So you have to, you basically have to have some level of gamesmanship to get them to sell to you, some level of being able to convince them that you can help them. So we worked together on how he could do that and how he could develop that. And he's a really super smart kid. That's the thing. I feel like if you give me any employee with drive and, some level of intelligence, I can make them a great employee because the way we work through things is very slowly, and we care about the knowledge more than the money. And I think that is a critical factor in business. I think if you're solely dependent on the money or only care about the money, it's going to limit you in so many capacities.
I love it. So do you have, now you obviously have a second sourcer. Plus you have VA, so you obviously built a program. For the second sourcer, did you develop a training module documented some way to be able to bring the second person up to speed? And if so, were you able to see a faster return?
We hired Roy about, I guess, right at about a month ago, and he is currently at the mark of 50% online arbitrage, 50% wholesale, and he's actually, we have him isolated currently down to one category, so all of his wholesale sourcing is done in toys and games at this point, and that's simply so he can learn that category extremely well. But yes, we use the same exact model to teach them. There are a lot of ways to do business. We really embrace the way that we do it. Like, we try to learn and change it at all times, but our growth has been outstanding, and we attribute that to the way that we do things, the way that we focus our efforts. So we did try to take them through the exact same training.
That's great. So now, right, we come along and we hire another employee, and it doesn't sound to me like, I could see what the processing person's doing, right? That makes sense to me. The sourcing person and the second sourcing person, I get what they do. That makes sense to me. But you've taken it a step further. You've tried to grow your business. You have a gentleman who's marketing, and what else does he do?
Dylan. We hired Dylan in April. And he handles our marketing and website development. We have a host of websites. He actually did a lot of development for our course. But as far as our internal operations, we do things like, I guess it's, this may sound weird, I have no idea. All of our communications are sent to a drop folder and analyzed, and then we repurpose them and develop better responses for manufacturers. So basically, Dylan gets to see every outgoing email and change that to fit our company message or what we're trying to portray. And that reflects in our approval rates and acceptance rates by manufacturers.
So it's almost culture-like. I mean, it's really helping make sure that whatever culture you guys want is communicated out there.
Yes, and done so very well. That's one of Dylan's great strengths. Is he's a fantastic communicator.
Well, that's great. I just don't think people would be willing to invest the kind of money it takes to attract that kind of and maintain that kind of talent.
We hired Dylan away from Dylan before he came to us was teaching college courses on marketing and website development.
So you clearly have bigger plans, obviously. Can I ask a question about sourcing? And if you don't want to tell us anything, that'd be okay, and I understand because it might be confidential. But do you pay the sourcers an incentive? Is there an incentive plan for them in some way based on the returns they can give you, the volume, or anything like that?
Currently, our sourcers – first off, let me describe our area. We live in a very, very small rural town in Kentucky. Competitive hire rates are around $7 and a quarter an hour to $8 an hour. And, some of the better jobs in the area pay about $9 an hour. Our guys get paid $12.50 an hour, which is extremely competitive in our area. Then we do give bonuses based on, we don't structure in bonuses. We give bonuses as we feel like we can and as we grow.
Okay. I've been always wondering, I haven't come across somebody yet who has put an incentive plan to say, hey, here's a milestone. If you can hit this, it's this, and if this. And I'm just wondering if that concept would work in the sourcing world and if somebody has done it. I'm sure it could work. I just wonder if somebody's done it yet. I'll find somebody who has. I'm interested in that. All right. When we come back, I'm going to take us to break. And when we come back, I want Dan to talk about where he sees his business, again, it's going to grow 300%+ this year. I mean, from an amazing base. It's clearly a structured business, and it's scheduled to really grow. And so I'm really interested to see where they're going next. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about that. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the Internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com. All right, before we jump back into the podcast here, in this segment we're going to talk about virtual assistants, you know, what he has them doing. We talk again about training and that whole process, and I'm just, again, just the focus these guys have, just the intensity and the willingness to use knowledge to make decisions, I just think is such a smart investment, and they clearly have it figured out. We talk about where they're going with the business, and we talk about what ways that you can negotiate better deals. One of the things that Dan talks about that I think is really important for you to think about is breaking down the product into processes and assigning a dollar value to each of those. And that will give you clues where you can negotiate a better deal. It'll make more sense when you hear it. So let's get into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Dan Metters, and we're talking about, you know, really a very successful operation, but it was successful probably right from the day they planned it, because the planning is what that happened. They knew what their goals were. They were pretty focused on it. And it sounds like, Dan, you have some absolutes in your partnership. It sounds like you guys both think similarly for the majority of the business. Is that really important for a partnership?
Well, it's actually almost the opposite. We don't think similarly very often, but we trust each other, and that's the most important factor. Is I trust Eric's ability to make a decision and unilaterally, and he trusts my ability to make a decision. So what we have done is we have kind of separated the responsibilities within our company, and if it's within a certain realm, I generally will make the decision. Now I do ask him for counsel if it's a very tough decision, and we will discuss as, you know, ad nauseum. But if it's a decision, you know, we trust our ability to make decisions and stand behind each other. If I make a mistake, he's never once not stood behind me, and the same thing is true for him.
No, because you're going
to
make
them. We trust our employees to make decisions. We empower our employees. For example, Matt has the ability to place any opening order he wants. It has to be based on our criteria for an opening order. But honestly, Stephen, I don't even know what's coming into our building anymore as far as products. I see it later on a report, but he doesn't come to me and say, "Hey, man, I found a great product. I want to place an order." He knows that he is 100% allowed to place that order and allowed to negotiate for any kind of discounts he can get.
And how long has Matt been working for you?
Since December 1st of last year.
Okay, so since December, what point did you empower him that you said, "Okay, here's the keys, go ahead"?
I started truly trusting him hands off around March, the end of March, early April.
Okay,
and that was because I had worked with him so much, and his intuition is very similar to mine, and his logic is very similar to mine. I guess that's because he learned our system. And I just trust, at this point, I trust his ability. I mean, he's basically a proven model for us.
Are you still sourcing yourself too from time to time?
Absolutely. I don't do it as much. I do more focus management with our guys. Like every week, at least twice a week, we sit down for a minimum of an hour, and we talk about the business in terms of ideas, what their pain points are that they encounter when they're sourcing or contacting a manufacturer. And we don't let any distractions get in, so it's a truly focused session. And we try to take that and apply whatever we can. Like, one of the biggest things that came about from one of these recently was about a month ago, we talked about, you know, what is our biggest pain point? What is keeping us from having a $20,000 day regularly? And the biggest problem we have is restocks, and that brought about okay, now we need to address the problem. So, you know, those guys went back to their job, and I went and I searched and I looked for possible restock solutions and found Restock Pro. We analyzed it. I showed it to Matt. We called the guys who own Restock Pro and got a month trial instead of the typical trial they advertise. And it has been phenomenal. I mean, that product has been phenomenal and has changed our it's probably changed our day, our average day, about $2,000 a day so far.
Is it, were you setting a trigger point to say, hey, you know, based on this and the sales velocity, and once it hits this trigger point order, is that what it does?
Yes. It'll go so far as place the order for you.
Oh, okay. So it's even that far. And so this is a web-based system?
Yes.
Okay. So that's really cool. And you can have – is there a limit to the number of vendors you can have in a system?
Honestly, I have no idea. I've not.
Okay. You haven't run into it yet.
I know, I don't think there's a limit on the number of vendors, but the price changes based on the volume of your orders.
Sure, that would make sense. That's a great question. So you've expanded, right? You're sourcing, and we can talk about the VAs in a minute. But now you're saying, hey, here's a tool. This is a nugget. Here's a tool to help make you do your job easier, to make you, you know, and they feel empowered. I assume the employees, especially since it came up in an employee meeting, they feel really bought into it. And this is a tool that makes it easier. Are they managing that process? Who's managing the Restock software?
Matt. Matt manages our Restock software. In fact, I have never opened it.
Okay, so he's putting the floor. He's putting all the trigger points. All that stuff is in there. He's able to do that himself.
Yes.
Amazing. And so would he say that has given him, you know, a 10% improvement, 20%? Is there any way to quantify how much of an improvement in his schedule that he's able to do?
Oh, he said it saves him on average currently about 10 to 12 hours a week.
Okay, so 12 hours a week that he was manually buying Restock items, right? These are already proven sellers, right, that you don't really need to do. It's just, hey, I want to order these. Hey, I want to order these. I'm down to this many. I need them. How quick can I get them? That whole thing.
Well, actually, it also tracks your ROI. So if your ROI hits your floor or goes below your floor, then it will not trigger a reorder.
Nice. And that's all integrated. That, you know, he's not manually entering that stuff.
You have to create the initial profile. So right. You have to create the company profile, the discount, and if we change our discount structure with the company, which we do all the time, he has to go in there and make those edits. But once the ROI and lead time floors are set, the product is tracked directly from Amazon API.
I was going to say they can get out there and scrape the API and get you that. That's what the piece I was looking for. So they can go out there and read that. Oh, that's amazing. Just amazing. Wow. And how many products would you say that you're using Restock Pro to manage for you?
He said the initial profile takes him about 45 minutes to build, and that's because he does do quite a bit of research into the products to make sure, and really researches. He goes back through our records to see what our lead times are and things like that. So we've done about 50% of the products that we carry currently, which is about, I would assume he probably has about 200 products. And
so 200 SKUs?
Yeah.
Wow. And that he's now not really managing. He's just getting a report. Wow. He's not even doing that, really. Somebody else is doing that. Amazing. Amazing. That's so smart. I don't think people understand how you can, when you reduce a pain point like that, that's significant. So now that 12 hours, he's looking for new relationships and things like that. Great. Okay, so we also have three VAs, and we're talking about some more. And so these other VAs are sourcers, right? These are also sourcers.
Correct.
And so they're doing wholesale sourcing for you, because you're 98% wholesale. Are they wholesale sourcing for you, or are they online arbitrage sourcing?
Whenever we started them out, like I said, our percentage of wholesale versus online arbitrage changes so much because we use online arbitrage as a training tool. I think that's super awkward, but it's just for us, it makes sense, and it seems to make sense with everyone we've trained as far as our employees. So we like to utilize that as a training tool for all of our employees. So when they start, when our VA started, they were all doing online arbitrage. And we, since we've transitioned two of them to wholesale, entirely wholesale, and we have them coming up, one of them comes up with product lists versus products we don't carry in our inventory and definitely hit our guidelines in terms of sales velocity and competition. And then the other VA goes through lists and organizes them to make Matt faster. So they plug in all of the ASINs and things like that. And what that does, we could run them simply through a program like Evaluate or something like that. But Matt will look at the overall product list and analyze what type of discount we would be needing, and then go back and he works the companies we deal with like a cavity. I mean, he hammers them and hammers them and hammers them for discounts. So, and you know, I also get on the phone and work them for discounts and things like that. So it gives us more of a perspective of how much of a discount we need to be working for.
Okay, well, let's talk about that for a second. So we find a product that's selling in the top 1% in toys. Let's just it's a Barbie. I don't know. That's a bad example because Mattel's tough. But it's a toy. And so you're saying, hey, I want to sell that product because it's a hot seller. I can buy it wholesale from Steve's company. And right now the price they're offering is, you know, $5. That's not enough for us to make our target. Is that when you go to them and say, hey, Steve, we want to buy these toys from you, but that price is not right enough for us in our model. Can you get it to this place? Is that the way the conversation goes?
Typically, yes. And sometimes those prices are inflexible, but they will offer you, hey, Dan, if you place a big enough order, we can get you free shipping. That leads to another negotiation, because then I have to understand what they value shipping at. So I will say, okay, so what is my shipping credit or what is my freight allowance on this product? And let's say it's $300. We work with a lot of freight forwarders, and if I'm able to get that same shipment shipped to me for $220 and that's the difference in my order, I can go ahead and do that. Like, I'll just be like, well, just give me a $300 discount and I will take care of the freight. So we use every aspect of a product.
Okay, wait, I want to stop there because that's brilliant. Okay, so again, I want to make sure people understand that. So you're saying, hey, they put a value, they put the number out there first, and they say the shipping was, they were going to charge you $300. And you're saying, wait, don't charge me the $300, and I'll take care of the shipping. Don't just give me the $300 credit or just don't ship it for free. Give me the credit, and then I'll ship it. That's that's a very smart move.
We use every – That's the thing a lot of people don't understand, is it's not only shipping. Every part of a process is monetized for a company. There is a value placed on that. And we try to break it down into individual parts to negotiate discounts. We focus on every single aspect of a product, every single from anything to how we reorder to get a discount. I mean, everything comes into play when we're trying to get the product to a target price.
And you're not taking advantage of a company. That company has real costs for every one of those places. And so if you can take and eliminate that cost for them, most of the time they are willing to pass that along to you.
Right. And that's the point, is you have to be – but you have to have the time and honestly the manpower to be able to do these things. Like, we have all these analysis points built in place. So we're constantly looking at every single aspect of a transaction to see how we can make it not only more efficiently for ourselves, but how we can make it more efficient for the people we're dealing with.
Did you ever work – did you or Eric ever work in the manufacturing operation? How did you get to the place where you understand all of this manufacturing business and all the distributors and all the touch points there? How did you figure that all out?
The company we worked at before we started our own business was – an online retailer. They did all of their sales through their website, actually a fantastic company, and did about $18 million per year in sales. I was in charge of sales and purchases for that company. My department dealt a lot with manufacturers and vendors, so I definitely understood the pain points from their perspective.
Wow, that's just great. I mean, it's just amazing. I interviewed Mendy Lipsick. I don't know if you know Mendy. And he was in the retail world. And so he was able to look at buying from a retailer's perspective. And that really helped him negotiate, or really helps him negotiate with those retailers, because he understands what they need to go through to do certain things. And I think this is a great example. So you're taking a skill set that you got somewhere else and applying it to this business. Just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So that leads me now to, I guess, a great segue into, you offer a wholesale course, right? Because you're 95 to 98%. And I love what you're saying, is that you're using online arbitrage for training, and you're getting a benefit from it, clearly. But you're wholesale. And so you guys came along and decided to offer a wholesale course to people. Tell us about that.
Well, our course is different than most courses, I think. Our course isn't theory-based. It is our literal blueprint of how we operate. It is exactly what we do and have done to get our business from July of last year to where it is now. So it's exactly our model. So it's an incredibly easy course to teach. Because every day I walk into the business, this is what I'm doing.
So the course's name is what?
It's the Wholesale Formula.
The Wholesale Formula, and is that .com?
Yeah, www.thewholesaleformula.com.
Okay, so if I wanted to sign up, and I'm going to sign into it right now. So if I wanted to sign up for this course, tell me what. I'm a brand new seller. I've never sold anything on Amazon. Is this the place I should start?
Actually, if you wanted to sign up right now, you couldn't. Whenever we launched our course, we take the commitment of our students very seriously. So our goal isn't to launch as many times as possible, which is kind of counterintuitive. We've actually had a lot of people ask us if they can get in, and they're really like, really? Well, you can't pay you and get in? It's like, no. Our goal has been to work with our students. So we work with our students a lot. And our goal is to make them succeed. We have several students that have multiple wholesale accounts now and are placing some pretty sizable orders and have seen some major growth in their business. And, everyone has been responding extremely well to the course, but we want to be able to offer as much hands-on training as we can, and really focus on those students until we feel like they're at a level that they don't have to be they're handheld as much as it is now. So we're kind of letting that dictate how we launch our course, because, More important than the course is someone who pays for the course succeeding, and that's the way we view it, I guess. I don't know if that answers the question entirely.
Well, I think it does. I mean, and so you're basically saying, hey, we have a course. It's just not open right now. But that doesn't mean you're not going to open it up again. You will
Correct.
Be reopening at some point? Okay, so where do people go to get on a waiting list?
Just jump. The easiest thing to do is jump on our mailing list, and whenever we reopen, we're going to – to post it, and we will send out something, some type of notification through our mailing list. You'd asked about new sellers, and I think new sellers can definitely get involved in wholesale. It's not as daunting as it seems. And like you said, we've processed 90,000 items with one person. If you're doing retail arbitrage, that is actually impossible.
Oh, definitely impossible.
So, it's definitely possible, and not as daunting as it seems. Our course wasn't initially geared for that. However, we are introducing a lot of new material, because there were a lot of sellers who said, I have very little experience on Amazon. So our next launch of our course will have that available to teach people how to get started on Amazon and how to read product pages and go through from the beginning. And while it might be redundant for some people, we wanted it to be available to the people who needed it.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so thewholesaleformula.com, there's a place you put in your email address, and then you'll be on the newsletter, and that's where you'll let people know that there's a way for them to get into.
Right, and the newsletter is actually pretty interesting. We do send out general tips that we've been utilizing to help with our own business, and stories that we think will help our readers, and things like that. We actually take a pretty good amount of time to develop our material and make sure it's something people would want to read. And that's how we view it. It's, if this came to my inbox, would I read it, or would it, you know, not do anything for me? So we try to put out quality material for everyone who is on our mailing list.
And again, you have Dylan, because you invested in that. You took a leap and put, you know, somebody who's got that experience and that skill set and the time, and you committed the resource to it. I applaud you for that. Before we completely close out this, I want to make sure we deal with the VAs. So the VAs were trained basically the same method, and there's three of them. You're thinking about hiring more now? Is that because you still have capacity given the size of your operation, or are you thinking about expanding again?
No, we are constantly trying to expand. The way our business is focused is it's completely cash flow based, and I've tried to explain this to people, and it's a hard concept to understand. But if you talk to people in terms of general profit margin, general ROI, you can ask somebody like, you know, if I handed you $1,000 today, and told you to spend it with the intention of achieving your 100% ROI, how long would it take you to fully realize that 100%? And most people will tell you, well, you know, I would get my money back really fast, and then I would it would be more gradual that they would realize their profit. So it may take them 6 months to realize that full 100% ROI. And, you know, they would have been profitable 2 months in or three months in, but they wouldn't have realized the full 100% until, say, month six. So what our business does is our typical ROIs, we do carry items with much higher ROIs, but a really common ROI for us is around 35%. A lot of our products fall there. I don't think it's our average. I mean, we do have some that are much higher, but it's a very common number for us. But the way our products work is I spend that $1,000 on a very high velocity item at 30 or 35% ROI, and I realize that full 30% within 30 days. Because our products are extremely high velocity. So let's say my cash outlay there is $1,000. I'm returning $1,300 at 30%. I'll just go off 30%. It makes the math much easier. So I return $1,300 at the end of month one. Month two, I'm able to reinvest my full $1,300 again and then realize the same compound at the end of month two. So if you do that extrapolation six times, and don't even add in the multiple effect of your additional 30% coming back, I'm able to realize an $1,800 profit versus the original $1,000 profit. So with that, under that model, my goal is simply to push the envelope in terms of I don't mind hiring employees because I understand how fast. Once they're trained, I understand how fast I can see a return and how quickly that return compounds itself. So right now we are hiring – our goal is to hire three more VAs, one of which we want to handle administrative tasks within our own Amazon account. So they're going to be somebody that creates cases, somebody that reconciles our shipment, checks our refunds for reconciliation, and a variety, you know, all the tasks, like we have a list of them that we do within our own Amazon account. And that takes that extra responsibility off of me and Eric to let us be more creative. Then our other two VAs, one of them will be trained exclusively for sourcing toys and games wholesale. And we'll probably start with RA. And like I said, I think that's a great foundation point. We'll start with that, but they will quickly be transitioned into just toys and games. And I think our new model going forward, we're going to try to create specialists for each category just so they can consistently mine those categories and consistently find great products. But this is our first test at having one that we don't anticipate moving out of that category. Then our second hire is going to be another online arbitrage person for shoes. Shoes has been incredible for us. Like I said, two of our three VAs right now source shoot or source wholesale. The other one sources shoes. But the return has been so high for us on shoes that it makes it we want to continue to push there as well. That's one thing about our business is we are mostly wholesale, but I don't turn down money. Like that's my thing. And we were able to automate that process. Our online arbitrage product goes straight to Prime Zero Prep. So we don't spend any time doing it. So our VA sends us giant lists of orders for our online arbitrage stuff. We place the order, it goes to Brendan, and he processes it on for us through Amazon. So we never actually touch the material, so it doesn't slow down our internal workflow. And it's just basically, I feel like I've created a system that has a target return with no effort whatsoever. With, you know, basically our employee spends 10 minutes a day placing orders.
So you can exponentially grow as much as you're willing to put the effort in, really, right?
Right. I fully expect within 3 years. We actually have a bonus structure set up for Dylan, based on our marketing and expansion, and his goal for year three is set at $20 million.
And you think you really think that's going to be it, huh?
Wow. I don't think that's going to be possible. I think we will murder that.
Love it.
That's the thing about a cash flow based business is our expansion is so rapid because we don't, you know, if a product does not work for us, we're able to get away from it relatively unscathed. But if a product works for us, we're able to take advantage of it for a really, really long time. And that helps. Our cash flow is constantly increasing. And when your cash flow gets really big, the other part of the equation is to truly grow and scale a business. I know, like Dwayne Malik, he's a great guy, but he hates debt. If you really want to scale to a level that our idea, you have to start working with banks and things like that for not only for lending, just for lines of credit, terms with vendors. And there's just a million things that are going on in a business like this. So the bigger your cash flow is in those situations, the more likely a bank is to work with you. If you look at somebody like Amazon, for instance, Amazon isn't profitable, but their cash flow is enormous. So investors are willing to invest because they know they could be profitable. Now, we don't have Amazon's income, but we are profitable. So a bank sees our numbers, sees our growth. It makes us really attractive to work with. So that's another aspect to our model that I feel like will help us hit our targets.
Well, it sounds like you've really put a foundation in place to be able to do that, and you're willing to invest. I mean, again, you know, you found a pinch point, you address it with some software, you're willing to put the money out there. You found pinch points in your production operation, you know, processing operation, you buy the resources that you need. I think that's the key. And then the other great tip that you talked about is you're involving those people who have they're stakeholders. They really are. Every person in there is a stakeholder. They have a vested interest in the success of that operation. And so you're involving them in the decision process. That's just so important. Just so important. Instead of keeping it secret, instead of worrying they're going to take this out and copy it, they could do it any day they want to. But we all know this is a job. This is work.
Our employees know ourselves from day to day. We for example, we did our $2 million. We had a $2 million celebration today because we broke $2 million. And we broke $2 million on late Friday. So that was, you know, but that's a source of pride for our employees. I think that having employees, that's one of the most important things is training them to the point that you trust them and can empower them. For example, our processing employee, he also handles logistics. So he can handle, so let's say that Matt has negotiated a deal for us to do shipping, for us to take over shipping. Baron would take over that, contact our freight forwarders and get the best possible rate. Then he also, you know, he's in charge of all supplies orders. We don't necessarily monitor those. We, you know, he can place that order and then we see it on a report later that month. But we, you know, he doesn't come to us and say, hey, I need to order, $2,000 worth of boxes. He does it, and then the boxes come in, and our workflow never changes. That's the important thing, is empowering your employees and making sure that you trust their decision making. And if they make a mistake, here's the thing: we don't, like, when our employees make a mistake, I'm not out there screaming at them. I'm not out there chastising them, because I know it was a mistake. I understand that there's a that things happen. That's not my primary concern. My primary concern is readdressing the issue such that it doesn't happen again. Like, one time our employees made a labeling mistake that cost us about $3,000, and instead of looking at it and getting angry, all we did was go out there and develop a new process to make sure it didn't happen again. We developed a form that they have to fill out on all the products that come in our building, and that's just to make sure another double level check to make sure that something's not confused for another product.
You're talking about putting a control in place, right? You find not a defect, it's a bad term, but you find something that just needs a little bit of improvement. You put a control in place to make sure it doesn't happen. They all learn from the experience, right? And it doesn't happen again. That's just such great advice. So, you know, we've seen where your business was. We kind of know where it's going. How do we take, you know, the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward, right? And so I want you to scale it back as we close. I want you to scale it back to something that any size business can do to improve their business. So some process improvement, something that you can do at a small level or at a big level like yours that they can take and put into their business tomorrow.
The most important thing for us is a concentration on the foundation of knowledge. We don't try to monetize something until we understand it. So we focus all of our efforts on for example, we didn't know wholesale when we got into it. It wasn't something that was, you know, we had it, we understood it slightly, but we didn't operate the same way we do today. But we embraced it without needing or wanting to see an instant monetization. I think people are spoiled sometimes by instant rewards, and we avoid that. We actually chastise that in our business. We try to make sure that we learn a process and understand why we're getting rewarded, or why something doesn't work for us. So that's the most important thing for us, is focusing on the process more than the end result. Don't let the end result dictate your actions.
Not the end result. Love it. That is exactly. That's such great, great advice.
And it's very hard to do.
Very hard to do. Well, because, you know, let's face it, you know, you see other people having this major success and you're saying, why am I not me? And so you're like, oh, I got to go do this and I got to do this. You're sidetracked. You get jump around. You're saying, nope. We're going to learn it. We're going to learn it. We're going to learn it before we make a big launch. I just love it. So, Dan, the best way to get in touch with you. So, you know, we have the wholesaleformula.com, and we know people can sign up there. Is there you're on Facebook?
Yeah, we have a Facebook group. It's called the FBA Wholesale Community.
FBA Wholesale Community. And is it a place where people can ask questions, learn about the business, or describe what it's about?
Absolutely, it's a free Facebook group. We currently have around 3,500 members, and it's an incredibly active Facebook group. So there's a lot of questions going on in there, and we actually do a lot of communication in there too. So we're constantly posting, you know, various nuggets from our business, as well as commenting on people's questions. And another thing is you get a lot out of, you know, the other people commenting on your posts. So our group is really active. We do a lot to make sure that there's no spam. We like people to post with love. So we encourage that, and we encourage people to work together. So our group is phenomenal, as far as, you know, anybody can get something out of it.
Okay. All right, so I'll have links to all that in the show notes. Dan, I really appreciate you taking the time tonight. I mean, it's just amazing with the success you and Eric have. Just wish you nothing but the best. We really appreciate you sharing this with us tonight.
Hey, Stephen, it was a pleasure being on your show, and I truly appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.